From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 25th day of November 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. We'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast, too. That with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'll bring you some of the agricultural news for the day and remind you that tomorrow is Thanksgiving, a holiday, and it's also a holiday on Friday for the university, but not for the trade in Chicago. We won't have morning reports for you on Friday, but I will be back on Friday afternoon with a special holiday edition, the corn panel from our Farm Assets Conference that was held earlier in the week. And that all happens right here on this closing market report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 25th day of November, the day before Thanksgiving. A couple of quick reminders. We will have a Closing Market Report for Friday. The markets are open. However, I'll be taking the day off. It's a university holiday, and we won't do any of our agricultural programming in the morning, so no fresh information that day. But if you missed yesterday's Farm Assets Conference, I will bring to you some of probably both the corn and the soybean panels on Friday, so be sure to tune in for that. Now, let's turn our attention to the marketplace as it's trading in Chicago or traded in Chicago for the day. That with Jackie Vank. She's at Stuart Peterson. Jackie, thanks so much for being with us this morning, or rather this afternoon. I really do appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome, Todd, and I want to say happy Thanksgiving to all of our listeners and to you. You know, looking forward to that day with family and good food. Saw a pretty good one this morning, though. You know, you hear all about the turducken, you know, the turkey with the duck with the chicken.
Sure.
Well, I saw one where they took a lamb and stuffed it into a pig and stuffed it into a cow. An actual picture. So take that, turducken, you know. I think it's going to feed more than just a few people, though, you know. So one of the other things I thought that was interesting was the American Farm Bureau Federation just completed their 30th Thanksgiving dinner price survey. And this was shocking. In 1986, a dinner for 10 was $28.71. And today it looks to be $50.11. The surprise is that if you adjusted it for inflation, it should be $62.30. So we really do have cheap food here in the United States. And on Thanksgiving, we definitely need every day to say thank you to all our producers. What a great, great job they do for us.
No, thank you for that. Hey, let's look forward to Friday, because there are things that will be happening. There are exports, I think, that should be out on Friday.
Right, yeah. With the market closed tomorrow, the exports will be delayed until Friday morning. We did have a sale of 190 million metric tons of soybeans today to unknown for 15-16. So that was a good thing. And the one negative that we've got going here is this dollar. This new 8-month high is certainly got to be bothersome to the marketplace in itself. Although the January crude, it seems to be consolidating lower. I mean, it's traded lower again today, and so it's interesting because when you look at crude, you know, it's priced in U.S. dollars. We've talked about this before, and so any rise in the crude price and rise in the dollar price are not necessarily good things. So with crude being down, at least it gives the impression that from a general world economic standpoint, it's not as negative. From an export standpoint on our side, it is definitely not a positive thing.
Can you tell me more about the relationship that crude oil has with the rest of the commodity markets, corn, soybeans, wheat? How important is that?
Well, it's important. It became important when we entered the energy arena. You know, when we came into the ethanol biodiesel business, we now aligned ourselves more with crude oil than we ever have. And so anytime you see tremendous pressure on crude oil, you have to expect, you know, that you're going to see pressure in the ethanol related industries and in the bio related industries. You know, it's a different relationship than what we used to have. You know, when we used to look at grains, we looked at food. That's what we thought about. You know, now we think about not only food, but we think about fuel. And And so, you know, a lot of people complain because of the fact that we're related to it. But, you know, that's just the way it is. When you get involved in the energy industry, that's where you're at. And it makes it tougher, too, at times. You know, a higher dollar makes it harder for us to export sometimes when it comes to the ethanol side of things. And, you know, luckily we've got a good biodiesel user in the U.S. Navy. You know, that's a big, big thing for us. But, you know, that relationship is going to continue as long as we're in this, in the energy business. And I don't see us getting out of it anytime soon.
I guess that makes a couple of things really important. Of course, by Monday, the end of the month, the United States Environmental Protection Agency will release its RFS, or Renewable Fuel Standards, for yep. the 2014-15 and the coming 2016 year. So we'll be keeping track of that. And then in Paris, the climate talks will be taking place. So we'll be watching those as well. I think there are a couple of other things around the planet we ought to discuss. In Argentina, they have a new president, and he'll take office when? Do you remember?
December the 10th is when he takes over, you know, and he's made a lot of promises. Like we talked earlier today, you know, he's made a lot of promises, and those promises, if he follows through on them, you know, could have a short-term negative impact on us. Long-term, it could change the crop rotation down there. So, you know, it would go away from being so heavily beans. Right now, the Argentine farmer plants beans because it's really the only crop that he knows for sure what he's going to get paid for, because the Argentine government controls the corn market. And so if Marcy actually does what he says, eventually we could see them go to a more normal rotation, like a 50-50 like we are, and there would be less beans then planted in Argentina and more corn. So, you know, we'd have competition from the corn side of it. But I think that in general, beans will continue to be planted down there as long as the U.S. dollar does what it's doing. But we'll see if he can follow through. That's the big thing. You know, a politician can say anything to win. Now it comes down to the reality. When you look at the fact that, you know, the bean export tax down there is the largest generator of income for the government that there is, that's why I mentioned earlier this morning that basically, you know, they're talking now, maybe he'll only do a 90-day suspension. Well, a 90-day suspension would just, you know, it would bring the stuff to the market a lot faster. Because remember, he's talking about devaluing the, you know, taking the currency control off. So the farmer would get a 30% boost there, but only lowering the export tax by 5%. So that means they'd still be paying a 30% export tax. It would be gone because of the 30% devaluation in the peso. And so, you know, that would bring a lot of income into the country that they've just been begging for and haven't been able to get. So it wouldn't surprise me if it only is a 90-day or something like that. But, you know, he didn't go into specifics when he was out there campaigning, you know, about how long or whatever. He just said he was going to lift the currency controls. So, you know, that'll be interesting if he does that. I mean, that's pretty smart. Rather than just saying, we're going to take the 35% export tax off, he's going to give it to them in a different way.
Well, it'll put competition into the marketplace from Argentina. Of course, Brazil is the big horse in the race down there, 100 million metric tons mm-hmm. or 102, depending on who you listen to for this yep. crop year. One of the things yesterday, you had sent along a pamphlet for the Farm Assets Conference, and I think people ought to know about this. You're hoping to organize not a trip to Brazil, but a trip, a webinar trip, relatively speaking, to kind of know the competition. Can you tell me more about it?
Well, what I have is, Todd, is basically a presentation that has pictures that show a lot of the infrastructure changes. It shows the ports in the Northern Arc and, you know, up on the Amazon, which is going to change the playing fields for all of us as we move forward. And also I do a lot of, you know, I do some informational talking about the impact of the devaluation of the real, the idea that they will continue to move forward, and also showing some of the areas that they're going to expand into. There's degraded pasture land that they're going to be expanding into because they can triple crop it, whether it means corn, beans, and cattle, And it happens to be in the area where they already grow 55% of their cattle. So just extremely interesting to be able to see what they've done down there, because in the last 15 years, the infrastructure changes are just immense. And I think it's really good for anyone who's sitting here in the U.S. to get a better understanding of what we're going to be up against as we move forward, and perhaps, you know, a little more motivation to be proactive rather than reactive when it comes to marketing. You know, they are definitely the big dog. And if you think about the fact that they can change, I think the last time I figured it out was just in 1 year, 129 million bushels of beans more in production. Can you imagine that in 1 year? You know, it's pretty astounding when you think about it. So I think that if they'd like to be involved, they certainly can drop me an email. They can send me a Twitter message if they want to at Jay Vakes. You know, or just call into the, you know, call into the office and ask for me, and we can set it up. And I plan on trying to do it in a way that, you know, maybe for some people an afternoon is better, some people an evening is better. But I just think it's something that's really, really important, because I did present this at a number of places already, and guys, just the reaction has been extremely positive. And it also covers a bit about China and some of the things that are going on there, and the impact that could have on us too, not just South America necessarily. So there are a lot of things we have to be aware of and be prepared for.
Good. I hope that you have a few folks that will sign up and take your webinar. It's easy to do. Just have to contact Jackie Vakes. You know, look up Stuart Peterson out of their West Bend office. But if you search Stuart Peterson online, you'll find it, and ask them to connect you to Jackie, and she'll get you hooked up with that. Let's see. A couple of other things we ought to talk about before I let you go for the day. The terror threat, that's been kind of a problem. And then the funds are in the market as well.
Yeah, the funds are really in the market. They're short corn, beans, and wheat. And so, you know, even though we have reluctant sellers, which can push the market higher, I think almost any move higher will bring either some fund selling, or it'll bring some South American selling, one or the other. You know, because Brazil is still out there. Brazil's not being impacted by what went on in Argentina necessarily, although from a competition, they do compete with each other, and they do dislike each other, I can tell you that much. But it's going to be interesting to see if we can get out of these consolidation ranges and find some way to move higher. Like I said this morning, you know, 29 out of 40 years we closed higher in January the day before, and 25 out of 40 we closed higher the day after. But the last 3 years we've closed lower on both of those days. And so it'll be finding out where we actually end up. We've got had a nice start to the day today, and that's going to be something that we have to look at. The other tension that's going on out there too, Todd, is this Russia-Ukraine thing. I mean, you know, Russia stopped selling gas sales to Ukraine. Now Ukraine closed their airspace to Russia. I mean, it's just, you get tension everywhere. You've got Japan pushing for the U.S. to be in the South China Sea because of China. You know, there's a lot of turmoil going on out in the world. I think it really leads to us to say thank you, God, for tomorrow. and a day of Thanksgiving, because that's what we really need.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, you and Jeff have a great Thanksgiving there, and I appreciate you being with us today on the Closing Market Report.
Yep, you and Clarion too. Take care. Bye-bye.
That is Jackie Vanks. She's from Stuart Peterson. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this day before Thanksgiving. In today's agricultural news, the United States Department of Agriculture is predicting a net U.S. farm income drop of 38% this year to $55.9 billion. That would be the lowest level in more than a decade, reflecting lower crop prices and softening dairy and hog markets. Net farm income will decline to the lowest level since 2002, just 2 years after it reached a peak at $123 billion, a record maker in 2013. The projected drop would mark the second consecutive decrease since 2013, driven in part by large corn and soybean crops and a projected 8.7% decline in crop receipts. Well, Deere & Company isn't doing a whole lot better, though the world's largest equipment manufacturer for fiscal 2016 beat most trader estimates, even as those lower crop prices reduce the money that farmers have to spend on equipment. Income through the for the year through October will be about $1.4 billion. That was better than the $1.39 billion average of the 18 estimates compiled by Bloomberg. Equipment sales will be down for a third year, falling about 7%, according to Deere. With a drop in farm incomes this year, more production cuts could be on the horizon for Deere. A Bloomberg analyst said the outlook for 2016 U.S. farm equipment demand is dimming as financial conditions continue to deteriorate. Well, outside of the agricultural industry, El Nino is expected to cost billions of dollars. CNBC reports the impacts of the weather event are likely to reach the energy sector as well. The El Nino of 1997 and 98 caused an economic impact of $30 to $45 billion, and it's likely to be higher this time around as economies have grown since then. The El Nino weather pattern, which is expected to strengthen further through the end of the year, is on track to be one of the three strongest such patterns in almost 70 years. While El Nino may give a boost to commodities like grains and livestock, it will certainly be negative for natural gas prices, as the weather phenomenon will give rises to a slightly milder than normal December in the world's largest natural gas consumer, being the United States. And finally, the Environmental Protection Agency has announced it will revoke approval of the Enlist dual herbicide by Dow AgroSciences. The EPA claims it's received new information on the herbicide and believes now it is more harmful than originally thought. Approved by the agency just over a year ago, Enlist Duo is a combination of glyphosate and 2,4-D. Environmental and conservative groups say their fight against the toxic cocktail helped fuel the reversal by the EPA, as the groups challenged the EPA's alleged failure to consider the herbicide's impact on endangered plants and animals protected under the Endangered Species Act. The EPA had approved use of Enlist Duo in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Ohio, South Dakota, Wisconsin, Arkansas, among many others. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Happy Thanksgiving. Here's a list of turkey facts you might find of interest. Did you know that Ben Franklin, in a letter to his daughter, proposed the turkey as the official United States bird? In 2007, the average American ate 17¾ pounds of turkey. The heaviest turkey ever raised was 86 pounds. That's about the size of a large dog. A 15-pound turkey usually has about 70% white meat and 30% dark. The male turkey, of course, is called a tom. The female turkey is called a hen. The turkey was domesticated in Mexico and brought to Europe in the 16th century. Wild turkeys can fly for short distances up to 55 miles per hour. Wild turkeys can run 20 miles per hour. Turkeys' heads change colors when they get excited. And most of the turkeys raised for commercial production are White Hollands. It takes 75 to 80 pounds of feed to raise a 30-pound tom turkey. A domesticated male turkey can reach the weight of 30 pounds within 18 weeks of hatching. 45 million turkeys are eaten each Thanksgiving, 22 million turkeys at Christmas, and another 19 million turkeys are eaten for Easter. Male turkeys gobble, hens do not. They make a clicking noise. Turkeys have heart attacks. The U.S. Air Force was doing test runs and breaking the sound barrier. Nearby turkeys dropped dead of heart attacks. The five most popular ways to serve leftover turkey are as a sandwich, stew, chili, or soup, casseroles, or as a burger. Hey, have a great Thanksgiving. If you'd like to see more odd turkey facts, visit the University of Illinois Urban Extension website at www.urbanext.uiuc.edu. I'm Todd Gleason.
On this day in agricultural history in 1715, Thomas Masters became the first American granted an English patent. It was actually for an invention discovered by Master's wife for cleaning and curing Indian corn growing in several colonies in America. By the way, the first patent issued within the colonies occurred in 1641 for a new method of extracting salt. In 1837, the first U.S. patent was issued for a silk figure power loom. In 1846, Carrie Amelia Nation was born. A well-known temperance movement activist, she was famous for destroying saloons with a hatchet. And in 1884, the first U.S. patent for the process of evaporated milk was issued to John Meyenberg, a Swiss immigrant living in St. Louis. The process began by heating the milk with external hot steam while stirring, followed by cooling, straining, and condensing. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Let's check the weather forecast with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Weather conditions across the Midwest today are mostly quite favorable with no meaningful precipitation expected, but there will be a few showers that will evolve in some of the westernmost parts of the Corn Belt as we get into late afternoon and evening. As we go through the Thursday through Saturday time period, there's a good chance that we'll see widespread precipitation occurring across the region, and some of it will be quite heavy. If you recall, there is a tropical cyclone off the west coast of Mexico, and that has become a Hurricane Sandra, and Sandra will spread its rain across Mexico and into Texas and parts of neighboring Oklahoma and Missouri as we get into the Thursday and Friday time period. The moisture will then work its way further to the east and north, impacting portions of the lower eastern Midwest as well as the northern sections of the U.S. Delta region. These areas will all see a fair amount of rain. In fact, too much rain in quite a few locations. We'll look for the totals from parts of central Texas and south eastern half of Oklahoma into Missouri and some neighboring areas in the northern delta to range anywhere from 2 to around 5 inches. The precipitation will result in some flooding since the ground is still saturated from previous heavier rain events that have impacted some of the same region. The precipitation in the rest of the Midwest may not be nearly as impressive, but we will still see rain and a few thunderstorms impacting quite a few locations as we move through the holiday weekend. The majority of the precipitation in Ohio, Indiana, northern Illinois, and eastern sections of Iowa will probably end up running from about a half inch to an inch and a half. There may be some locally greater amounts, but it's going to be southern portions of Illinois, southwestern Indiana, Kentucky, and areas from Missouri back to Texas that will probably see the greatest amounts of precipitation. After the storm system passes, there will be a small disturbance in the northern U.S. plains that will generate a little bit of light snowfall as we move through the latter part of the coming weekend and into the early part of next week. At the same time, there will be a possible redevelopment of storminess down in parts of the Delta and will shift into the southeastern states as we get into the early part of next week. This resurgence of precipitation could create some additional concerns about heavy rainfall, and we'll probably see some potential for change in the forecast as we move through the weekend. Most of the significant rains in the lower Mississippi River Basin with this second event will actually occur during midweek next week, and the southeastern states would be impacted at the end of next week. The lowermost parts of the Midwest could pick up a little bit of precipitation from this event, but again, I caution you that perhaps this system will be weaker in future forecast model runs, and we shouldn't expect to see it too much in the way of significant precipitation for the Midwest. Our temperature bias over the next few days will be trending a little bit on the cooler side after the heavier rain event passes through the region, but most of the Midwest will continue to see a very favorable temperature distribution. Highs today will be in the 40s in the north, 50s and lower 60s in the south. Tomorrow and on Friday, we'll see colder air pushing into the western Corn Belt, and highs will be limited to the 30s on Friday in much of the west. While the eastern Midwest will see temperatures still in the 40s and 50s, with maybe some 60-degree readings near the Ohio River. This is meteorologist Drew Lerner.
Thanks, Drew. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that wraps up this Day Before Thanksgiving edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.